Welcome to Manager Tools. This week's cast, how to master your response to your engagement survey, part two. The questions this cast answers are, how do I respond to my engagement survey results? What can I do when my organization does an engagement survey? And how can I improve my engagement survey results? Answers to these questions and more in this cast. Keep listening. Whether you're an individual manager or an organization ready to engage in effective managerial behaviors, we have your solution to digitally and quickly learn what to do and measure your progress in doing it. Roadmap Online gives you, the individual manager, as well as your organization, the ability to put into practice the Manager Tools Trinity of one-on-ones, feedback, coaching, and delegation with your staff. In order to gain access to Roadmap, become a licensee, which you can do by visiting manager-tools.com/products. So the second way change happened, that is pre-internet, was the spread of ideas through books, through the written word, and to some degree, with one or two management magazines that are respected. HBR and Sloan are the most likely. But that's another way that we spread those changes, right? And that said, let's keep in mind that there were far fewer management books 50 years ago than there are now. Fewer ideas into that overall sphere of ideas one could read about. And typically these books came from or were written by management professors, many of whom had become, like Peter Drucker, for example, consultants as well. All of that to say that many of these management books, which we had access to, were written for CEOs in an attempt to market the professors' consulting businesses to organizations. It's a sale.
Sure.
It's for sales. It's to get ideas out there and hire me so you can pay me more money so that I can help your organization achieve something.
Yes. And we would suggest, too, that a lot of people took those ideas, ran with them, and even not having not hired a consultant, did well with them.
Yeah.
Specifically because we think the world of Drucker. When these books, that to your point, were salesy, were read by CEOs, if they were and they liked them, then that created often a consulting engagement. Not always. And consulting engagements then, even ones that come from books, they have all the problems that we mentioned earlier for managers.
Exactly.
The vast majority of management books are written not for the manager, but for CEOs looking for those big dollar consulting gigs. And you've probably experienced this. That's why you read a management book, you finish it, and you feel like, okay, there's not a lot of actionable guidance here. Again, principles, less checklists. And that's a little bit shifted because there are a lot of books for individuals out there these days. So there are some checklist type actionable guidance books. And still, historically, that wasn't the case. There were four CEOs.
Yeah.
Hey, if you like these ideas, bring me in and I'll tell you what
to
do about
them. For the people that had a budget to hire them. That's why it's not for individual managers, yo. You don't have a budget to bring in a consultant to help your team. The organization does. This ain't for you.
Right.
It's for people who have budget.
It's the Wally Sutton quote. Like, why do you rob banks? Oh, because that's where the money is. They write these books in a way that does not help the individual manager change their day-to-day work life or behavior, because then they wouldn't make any money.
Yeah.
And of course, here we come shifting directly into that hole and telling you guys these things via podcast.
Yeah, I was going to say, and then—
Which is not where the money is.
Right, which is not where the money is. So yes, for free.
And of course, we are part of what happened next, which is
the internet.
Yeah, the value, right? The humanity-changing value of the internet, which y'all, there 100% is. The inflection point of the world's situation because of the internet, right? It's almost hard to wrap your mind around it. Even if you lived before the internet was prolific. And you, I mean, what's crazy too, if you think about it, is like, I have siblings who weren't alive, and most people have kids who, when their children were born or when these people were born, the internet already existed. And even a person who, as a person who was alive before, it's hard to wrap your brain around the impact, to the true impact
absolutely.
Of the internet, because it's just so embedded in our normal lives now.
Yeah.
The same thing with cell phones. Okay, the humanity-changing value of the internet comes from spreading of ideas and broadening human connections. You can reach people who you were unable to talk to prior.
Yeah.
Instantly and, you know, far away and all these things. And those concepts are just super, super closely connected to each other, that ideas spread faster because of more and broader human connections.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And again, this is why people think of the world as something that is speeding up. Before.
Yeah, because you're looking at the internet. Y'all.
Yeah, exactly.
You want to slow down? Stop looking at the internet. Stop looking at your phone as much. Like, you've surrounded yourself with devices that have increased the input to yourself exponentially. And then you say, why is it faster? Y'all, it's faster because you're making it faster by giving yourself access to the speed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, y'all. You've created your own situation. I don't know that it's necessarily a problem. Although, get off social media. Just do it. Just quit. Just quit, y'all.
Before the internet, the barrier for entry being either you read it in a book or you innovated it yourself,
right,
was much higher. New ideas were much harder to come by when there wasn't the internet. You either had to write a book, which is pretty hard, and that's nothing compared to getting it published, exactly, let alone having people read the dang thing. I mean, it's not that easy to spread your ideas pre-internet world.
Yeah, how would you, like, what? So ridiculous. Imagine the difference in just publishing a book. Like, you have a book, but if it's not on the internet, do people read it?
Right? That's the thing.
No.
Right. And so because of internet, that's the thing about books, is somebody has to know your ideas exist to further propagate those ideas.
Right.
When you're just a person writing a book and there's no internet to tell people you have a book, is anybody reading your book? Well, far fewer people than if the internet existed. And organizations resist it. As you can imagine, sharing new ideas with their competition, other people that are going to benefit from these ideas. Why would we come up with this great innovation internally that works well for our organization and give it to people who are competitors? No, we're going to innovate internally. We're going to keep all of that internal information for our own uses.
Yeah. Okay. So the internet comes along and changes everything.
Exactly. And reduces the barrier to entry for new ideas to virtually nil. And has increased exponentially the number of people we can share those ideas with, because all of us are subject to new ideas every single day. To Kate's point, we're looking at the internet all of the time.
Oh my gosh.
Folks, this is one of the reasons that short videos on the internet are so popular. They're so easy to consume, and they don't require us to think at all. Mm-mm. We just have to open an app, and these new ideas are in our minds.
Yeah. It's intense to think of your interaction with the internet as increasing the amount of ideas put into your head. And when you do start to think of it that way, I would suggest it can be a bit overwhelming, and that maybe it's a good reason for people to kind of limit their exposure a little bit. Only because if you're anything like me, sometimes I feel that it's not necessarily a good idea to see just this constant onslaught of new ideas, A, because they haven't been vetted. Mm-hmm. If you're engaging with like social media or something, you don't know who's tried that thing and tested it.
Mm-hmm.
To some extent, I think the idea as well, if it has likes or views or whatever, okay. Except the reason someone likes or views a video isn't necessarily associated with the validity of
exactly.
the idea or putting it into place. And it could be that you feel that you're constantly being exposed to these ideas, but then really not, like, you could feel end up feeling badly that you're not implementing all of them. Like, there's so many options. it's almost paralyzing, yeah, I would assume.
Agreed.
For people who are constantly viewing, like, TikTok, for example.
That's the thing, right? Like, these new ideas, you don't even have to engage with them without even thinking. You can right. absorb this information.
If you think about, like, likes, views, whatever, what it really means is, because the internet allows you to see all these things, but without any vetting, essentially, these ideas are not curated. Anybody can upload a management video. Anyone can spread that idea to their friends. 25-year-olds who have just started a career in management or HR post their idea. And if the person has a cute dog in the background, suddenly it's the most liked video about hiring you've seen ever. And okay, it's pretty unlikely that just because there's a cute dog in the background that these ideas are going to be useful. It's unlikely that these ideas will be good for most right? managers. Some of this is just cleverly marketed and so therefore gets spread. And there's so many things that make it not good.
Not good.
There's a lot more bad ideas out there.
Absolutely.
And even though there were just as many bad ideas before the internet, you didn't have to look
exactly.
at them.
Exactly. You didn't have to look at them. They weren't coming to your phone right in front of you
to yourself
every
all day
single
long.
Day. Exactly.
Right. You're actively asking your brain to look at them.
Right. And folks, the idea that there are more ideas, the fact that there are more ideas out there, many of them bad, isn't inherently negative. More ideas right. means more ideas. If you're familiar with any of our guidance on brainstorming, the more ideas, the better. Surely there are going to be a lot more bad ideas, but guess what? There also are a lot more good ideas.
Yes.
But this mass of ideas does require the reader or the watcher, I guess in this case, the person receiving those ideas to think about those ideas, to put some effort into, for themselves, because no one else is going to, curating the validity and effectiveness mm-hmm. of the ideas you're receiving. Unfortunately, a lot of us aren't thinking when we browse for these ideas. Our brain is just in neutral. We're just passive recipients of this information. And even if we are thinking, but we don't have a ton of knowledge on the subject itself that's being fed to us, we aren't discerning enough to know good from bad. This mm-hmm. is very much like that concept that we have is pervasive in society, fake news. Every once in a while, I'll see something. I saw one recently this past weekend, and I was talking to a person. I'm like, oh my gosh, it looks like X happened. I'm like, wait a minute, no. That's on some random small news source, and I don't see it anywhere else on any other major news source. Please forget all of the words that I said in the last 30 seconds. Ignore them. Mm-hmm. If we find that it's on more and also more effective, more responsible news sources, I suppose, then I'll let you know whether or not that event has truly happened. But for now, let's pretend it's fake because it might be fake. It's kind of that same idea. It's just because you saw it one time on TikTok doesn't make valid.
Yeah.
It makes an idea that someone had.
The tricky part too is I think people have convinced themselves that somewhere on some small news source, there is a true thing. And y'all, that is possible, but it's so rare.
Yeah, it's so remote a possibility.
In the same way that good ideas that will be effective are also very rare and not necessarily just that good ideas that will be effective are rare. Mm-hmm. Good ideas that will be effective and stand the test of time are rare. Mm-hmm. And so people say, oh, well, you have to look everywhere because you could find out something's happening on Twitter. Well, that's true. And let's engage our brains.
Yeah.
The idea that you're constantly taking all this information in, but you're not vetting it, you're not parsing it. And then a lot of people aren't outputting stuff.
Yeah.
Either. Like if you're just passively ingesting, mm-hmm. maybe perhaps that's not the best way to go about this.
Right.
And I do think a lot of people and many managers are looking for something easy, a silver bullet.
Oh, this is human behavior. This is why people want a diet pill and no one wants to eat healthy.
Just eat more
vegetables.
Salad.
Go for a run. No, everyone's like, is there like a pill? Is there like a something I can like just ingest that will be like a second of effort every day? Because I know what will help for certain, But that thing's harder than the amount of effort I want to exert to fix my problem.
That is one of my big struggles in life is listening to people talk about diet and exercise and their own image, their own body image. And as a person who eats all the vegetables because they know that's the answer, listening to people be like, well, you know, I had like 6 pieces of bacon. It's like, oh. And it's the same with management.
Yeah,
people tell me all the time, I have to check email all day long. I hate it. I wish there was a solution. Dude, there is. And it's usually true that only people with experience in a certain area, experienced managers in this case, know that there are no silver bullets. Easy silver bullets are unlikely to be successfully implemented and then therefore unlikely to result in improvements in results or retention. It's inexperienced managers that don't know this. And then in part because they don't know the measurements of managers are results.
Yeah, exactly. So
they don't even know the measure.
If you don't know what's important, how would you even know how to begin to accomplish that thing?
Yeah. If you don't know how to define success, then you don't know if your bullet will create success.
Exactly. That's exactly it. And folks, what Kate just said is not an attack. It's not meant to be an attack on inexperienced or unknowledgeable managers at all. The vast majority of managers are absolutely entitled to their lack of knowledge and experience. You earned it, I guess is what I'm saying. You totally earned it.
Nobody was there to teach you.
Exactly. Most managers weren't even given basic manager training. So it's not your fault if you've fallen prey to some bad management ideas. And we compliment you, in this case, for listening to this podcast and for trying to learn on your own some concepts that can help you benefit, given the fact that I would assume if you're listening to this for free, you're probably not being funded by your organization for this learning opportunity. So welcome for joining us. And it's not easy, we fully acknowledge, for managers, especially inexperienced managers who don't have a BS meter, to filter some of these ideas through a process and ensure or trying to figure out which ones are good and which ones are bad.
Right. You're floating in a sea of bad information and you don't even know which fish you're supposed to be catching.
Exactly. So you don't even know.
And it's not your fault. It's the internet. Mm-hmm. The internet has created this rapid spread of all kinds of ideas, no curation, no testing, no data, which means it would be good. We want to ask of you all, be discerning.
Yeah.
Try to separate the wheat from the chaff and look at what's out there with an eye towards judgment about what is valuable.
Exactly.
Because not all of it is. In just over 2 weeks, on May 16th and 17th, we will be coming to Minneapolis. We'll actually be downtown in Minneapolis hosting our EMC and ECC in-person events. If you'd like to learn more about how to manage your team using the Trinity or how to communicate using DISC, you can sign up online, manager-tools.com/training, and come and see us in Minneapolis. We'd love to host you. That brings us to
I was going to say, and that brings us to engagement.
Which is, honestly, the employee engagement movement started with an academic paper by a psychologist, William Kahn, in 1990. And you might think that with all the significance paid to engagement today. This was a large study with lots and lots of professional employees involved in it, and unfortunately not. Mm-hmm. And this happens with other management trends. Professor Kahn's work had very little grounding in corporate organizations.
Yes.
His paper was a theory.
Yeah. William Kahn, again, being a psychologist, had a theory and the basis, we should say, of which is sound information,
sure.
In our opinion. He had a theory that the level of engagement employees had at work made a difference in their effectiveness.
Yeah.
Legit, right? That sounds completely right. We agree.
We support you, Dr. Kahn. Yes.
Exactly.
Agreed.
However, this is where it gets to start. It starts to get a little bit off course here. The start of this engagement concept was tested by William Kahn on 12 camp counselors and staff and 12 employees of an architecture firm. Now, the way he came up with his data is he interviewed them regarding their moments of engagement and disengagement from their work. That was in bunny ears. You couldn't see it. Moments of engagement and disengagement from their work. He then applied his conclusions from those interviews to his belief regarding his theory, that is, that individual employees had increased their work effectiveness when they were more engaged. And he then applied those conclusions from interviews to his beliefs regarding the theory that bringing one's whole staff to work. Whole self to work.
You should bring your whole staff, but.
Yeah. And self. Yeah. But yeah, bringing your whole self to work was necessary for them to engage effectively.
And I know today I am full of what appeared to be, what may appear to some people to be tangents. I got to stop us there for just a second, because two things always occur to me when we hear about this particular piece of work. A, we are but a small part of our employees' lives. Mm-hmm. So I struggle to believe that we can always effectively increase or influence our direct's engagement or disengagement during the workday. The idea that somebody has something going on at home and they are paying full attention mm-hmm. at work is false. Even if you don't work from home, if you had a hard night or something's wrong at home, somebody's sick, whatever it is, your kid's sick home, there's all kinds of reasons why people aren't necessarily as engaged every day at work that are outside of work. Mm-hmm. That's A. B, this is that tension again. It's anathema to me that no one is talking about the fact that there is a huge trend right now about don't bring your whole self to work. There's this whole trend about, like, guess what? You should have a life outside work and you should not be burning out and quiet quitting and all these other things that people are talking about are in direct conflict
with engagement.
With the idea of bringing your whole self to work.
They're the anti-engagement. The anti-engagement is also as popular as engagement right now. You're absolutely right.
There's an article in the Wall Street Journal today, and I have not had a chance to read it, that is about bringing your whole self to work mm-hmm. and how you shouldn't do it. And specifically, y'all, that article is based on the idea that you shouldn't necessarily talk about your personal life at work. No comment on the article yet. Haven't gotten to assess it against this content. However, if you are a person who's also talking about quiet quitting and also talking uh-huh. about work-life balance and burnout and you struggling and this whole idea of, like, I'm not going to do my best at work, then you better stop talking about engagement yeah. surveys. You better choose, because I am having a real hard time with both those things being
yeah.
true.
Yeah. At the same time, it's not even possible. You're doing the opposite.
Why is anyone talking about this?
You're purposely disengaging.
Seriously, how are people supposed to hold these two ideas in their minds? And you know what it is? What's frustrating about it too is that it appears to be more popular to suggest that it's the manager's responsibility to create yeah. engagement while the directs are actively trying to avoid
yeah.
it. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're going to have to talk for a few minutes because I am chapped.
Okay, yes. So back to the psychology. Let's go to the psychology for a minute.
Whew.
Okay, so from the beginnings, hearkening back to William Kahn's work, for the next decade, after his paper was released, other psychologists continued to extend and evaluate the theory. There appears to, based on our thorough investigation of the topic, there appears to be only one paper with a larger sample size attempting to then validate Professor Kahn's work.
This is not science, y'all.
Exactly. And there are many other scholarly articles regarding the theory, but as it's often the case with these studies and papers, the authors reasonably attempted to combine their own psychological theories with the theories of Kahn. And Kahn's original ideas have somewhat gotten lost over
Maybe
the
my
years.
My soapbox was unnecessary.
In the ongoing growth of employee engagement theory. Now, it's totally fair. This happens. That is, there's yeah. an initial idea. A bunch of other psychologists say, oh, that's cool. Let's see if there's any basis to this. Let's check it out ourselves. and they camp onto it and they change it and they throw in a little bit of their theory. And it's completely normal in psychological research, and it's completely valid. This is how it works.
Right. The first idea, you can have the beginning of a good idea. Yeah. It's not necessarily true that you have a full idea, even if your idea is good. Bouncing it off other people, other people contributing, that's 100% awesome. That is how the original organic sharing of ideas and the refinement of cultural, you know, that's valid.
That's totally valid. This is how it's done. This is exactly how it's done. This is how it's meant to be done. However, what this means is that Kahn's original ideas have somewhat gotten lost in the shuffle. Employee engagement is less about the original work now than it used to be.
Sure.
And
valid.
In turn, all of these adaptations of the theory spun up, were created, and starting at the turn of the century, employee engagement started to take off. Now, we admit, with a name like that, it stood a better chance than normal of taking off. I mean, employee engagement? We love a good turn of phrase. I mean, quiet quitting? Why wouldn't we? Everyone loves
alliteration
a good turn.
Exactly. For the win.
It's fun. And people like it. And employee engagement, it seems like a legitimate concept that, of course, obviously, we want all our employees to be engaged. Why wouldn't we? This is something cool. Let's dig into it even further.
But it also took the engagement industry's marketers to propagate it.
Yeah.
Right? It's not just that it's a good turn of phrase. There's a lot of great wordsmithing out there that doesn't get super far.
That's all for this week, folks. Join us again next week for part 3 of our guidance.